Good morning. It is Sunday, September 8th, 2013. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Kyle Kellums.
Ahead on Weekend Ozarks, the art of bedmaking. There's a trick to perfect corners. And a Decatur chicken farm makes strides towards shelf space in national stores.
But first, a look back at other stories that developed over the past week. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis has his Week in Review.
We've had a few stories over the course of the past week about different area organizations who have an eye turned toward the future. One local school district started the new school year with some forward-thinking news. Phase 1 of the $96 million Fayetteville High School renovation and expansion project recently received LEED Silver accreditation. Alan Wilburn, the public communications director for the Fayetteville School District, says that the application for LEED certification involves several factors throughout both the design and construction processes.
The design takes tremendous advantage of the available natural light and some great southern views, so which that reduces the number of light fixtures that were needed, and so obviously that reduces the energy cost there. In the construction, 78% of the total waste from phase one was diverted away from landfills. So that you could recover the recyclable materials and all those types of situations, so that greatly lessened the impact on local landfills.
Another factor that came into play in the building's leadership in energy and environmental design application was the fact that because the building was placed on an existing site, there was no additional cost to run sewer, water, electrical, or other utility services to the building. In addition to acknowledging the sustainable aspects of the project, Wilburn says that the LEED certification shows that the school district is being good stewards of taxpayer money by making an investment in a facility that he says should last the district another 60 years.
The first Fayetteville High School that was constructed on this site was built in 1952, and it obviously had some modifications and some changes, but it served us well for generations of students attended that school. That's the thought with this particular building, that we know its structure sound, it's well built, and is taking advantage of all the new latest technology, and to make it also the safest possible environment in terms of the energy, in terms of all of the paints and finishes that were used are very low in terms of the smells and all those kind of things. So it's a very amenable place to be.
Wilburn says that district officials have found through the years that students, much like Ernest Hemingway, react to their environment, and that a clean, well-lighted place provides a positive atmosphere that's conducive to learning. The LEED certification cost about 1% of the overall construction budget for the entire project, or about $960,000. Wilburn says that the entire Fayetteville High School project is the third LEED certified project in the district, behind the new Happy Hollow and Butterfield Trail Elementary Schools. The city of Rogers is also looking into the long-range future, with its recent steps taken toward the development of a long-range development plan for its downtown area. The plan is only in the preliminary stage, as the city has just issued a request for qualifications for firms that would be capable of developing such a plan. While some may already consider the historic downtown district vibrant, Rogers Mayor Greg Hines says that the plan to be developed would look beyond the downtown area's current boundaries.
It really looks at how we tie a much larger geographic area to the vitality of that central heart of downtown. And it focuses a lot more on how do we make it a livable, walkable residential district that also supports, viable commercial endeavors.
Hines says that the eventual plan for downtown Rogers would tip more in favor of commercial interests for residents rather than tourists, which, in his opinion, is how to create a sustainable downtown area. But he says that the plan to be developed will recognize that downtown areas, particularly those in the South, typically reinvent themselves every couple of decades.
It moves sort of in a direction that the owners of the buildings want to see it move, or the tenants that they get. And what we want to see in that particular area is how do I attract and how do I create some different zoning and some different compatible components for living and retail and commerce in downtown, so that the businesses that you see on those storefronts, those are businesses that are supporting the residents that live in the greater downtown area, not as much focused on bringing people from other areas.
Although he and other city officials are pushing for development of the strategic downtown plan, Hines says that he hopes it will become something that is developed on a continual basis through the future, rather than within a specific time frame. And finally, a group that advocates for ethics reform in politics has an eye on limiting the amount of money flowing into future elections. The group Regnat Populus, which has presented other ethics reform proposals in the recent past, submitted a proposed ballot measure to Arkansas Attorney General Dustin McDaniel this week that would bar corporations, whether they're formed in Arkansas or elsewhere, from contributing to political campaigns. The draft ballot question would prohibit corporations from contributing to political action committees, ballot question committees, political parties, and other groups, and it would also prevent corporations from purchasing advertising within 60 days of an election that advocates for a particular candidate or ballot issue. Paul Spencer, co-chair of Regnat Populus and a civics teacher at Little Rock Catholic High, says that the most important part of the proposed ballot initiative is that it seeks to remove the millions of dollars in corporate spending on local, state, and federal elections in Arkansas.
You know, when you look back at 2008, President Obama's campaign expended nearly $1 billion in their efforts to get President Obama into the White House. So that's an extreme example, but if you go through and look at some of our local elections and our statewide elections and so forth, there's just an obscene amount of money being spent. And one of the primary reasons we launched our last ethics campaign in 2012 and worked with the legislature in this last year to get the comprehensive ethics amendment referred over to the voters is to try to start taking some of that money out of the system.
But before voters can decide on the ballot initiative, it must pass muster by the state's attorney general. From the Herald and Blanche Kalk News Studio, I'm Timothy Dennis, and this is Weekend Ozarks at Large.
The local food movement, comprised of individual and neighborhood gardens, has created renewed interest in food preservation. For more than 100 years, county extension agents have worked within communities teaching the art and science of canning. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich, who's preserved blueberries, applesauce, and okra, takes us to the county fair to meet an extension agent who is a master food preservationist.
Temperatures hover around 100 degrees this afternoon. On this, the final weekday of the 2013 Washington County Fair, farm families tend to livestock in breezy barns. A girl named Emily gives her prize goat Rebel a bath. Since last weekend, fairgoers have enjoyed the Beauty Queen contest, gospel music, daily pig races, tractor pulls, and of course the carnival. But county fairs are also big reunions where farm families show off their best livestock, horticulture, and preserves, vying for that much coveted blue ribbon.
In my 19 years with Extension, I've never seen so many people. I am new to this. Tell me how to enter.
Washington County Extension Service Agent Linda Chappell, an expert food preservationist and judge in other counties, gathers up jars of winning preserves from a display rack and sets them on a red checked cloth covered table as a big swamp cooler and huge fans hum around us.
Products like salsa, tomato juice, or they might have a full garden and they've got green beans and corn and carrots. We even have carrots this year, so that's kind of new. We also have honey. We'll have people with honey, all kinds of jellies. A lot of your first time food preservation folks, they can do jelly very easily. You don't have to have a pressure canner to do that. It's just a water bath process, so we'll have a lot of varieties of jelly. So that, and they're pretty excited. They come back and they see their ribbons and they're ecstatic when they see they've got a blue ribbon.
Novel preserves are also appearing at local county fairs.
People are getting a lot more adventuresome. So we have dried mushrooms. Dehydrators are really popular. We have dried mushrooms. This one is dried zucchini. We have a really wonderful fragrant dried lavender. They just grew different herbs in their garden and dried them, and you smell them and you pinch them.
Linda Chappell learned the art of food preservation as a girl raised on a dairy farm between Blue Eye, Missouri and Berryville.
actually began in my mom and my grandma's kitchen. So when you know how to do, so I can't remember not going through a year not canning. You know, my age grandparents, they still can. They still have a garden, they still can. But then we kind of skipped a generation, but it's coming back.
Evidenced by the increasing number of entries into the county fair, as well as inquiries for office, she said. Linda Chappell says food preservation was a common practice through the Great Depression. But after the war, modern homemakers, especially in urban areas, took to store-bought. But many American farm families still put up their own vegetables and fruits. Over 1,000 entries at this county fair. The USDA and County Cooperative Extension System historically are recognized as the most credible sources for science-based recommendations for food preservation.
Every county has extension homemakers, and then each county, so there are clubs that are throughout the county. In the communities, we're still very much community-based. So there will be a club in Elkins and Goshen and Bethel Heights. So all the different communities. And then there will be officers. And then those officers come in to form our county council.
Extension councils decide programming, including food preservation classes.
First, you can go to uaex.edu and click on publications. Our website's pretty easy to find things. And if you just want to know how to preserve tomatoes, you can go there. Or if you want to know how to grow tomatoes, it'll take you to a different spot, and it's in the agriculture section on growing tomatoes. Or you can call our office. I would much rather you call my office and visit with me. I will talk to you, figure out exactly what you want to do, and I'll be glad to send you some stuff in the mail, or you can drop by. And we have three wonderful secretaries in our office here in Washington County. They are more than happy to find you what you need. So our number is 444-1755. Come by and see us, and we'd love to help you get started in this or help you.
Linda Chappell is one of only a handful of food extension agents in Arkansas that's expert on food preservation. She also teaches safe restaurant food preparation certification courses. So what's the cost of the extension service canning classes?
Most classes are free or just for cost of supplies, like what it costs us to buy the jars, the sugar, or the vegetables. One of the easiest things, of course, is dehydrating. You just slice them very thin and then put them in a dehydrator or an oven or a solar oven. The next to that would be freezing. There are things you can freeze very easily, squash that you're going to turn into bread, that's my favorite. Or some people love corn that is frozen. Some things don't freeze as well. They get a little tough. Of course, that requires freezer space. Not everybody has a big freezer. So if you don't want to do that, you can water bath certain items that's a little more of an acidy food, like tomatoes. They need to have enough acid in them that they don't have to be pressured. So pressure canning is the most labor intensive. And it has to be very specific on times and the amount of pressure. You know, 10 or 15 pounds of pressure, but we have very specific, again, guidelines. It's just a recipe on what you follow and how you do it.
And it's super satisfying to hear cooling jars of preserves pop as the metal lids contract and seal. Now, if they don't, no problem. Simply refrigerate immediately and consume the item within a few days. Cleanliness is key. Everything needs to be sterilized. Jars should have no nicks, and lids need to be new. Screw tops can be reused, but show no rust. Agricultural Extension Service offices publish clear, scientifically based instructions. Growing your own food, whether on porch pots, backyard beds, or in community gardens, is on the rise, and Americans are looking towards old traditions.
People do want to be able to raise their own food and be more self-sufficient. We actually had a call this week on somebody that they actually said they kind of live off the grid. They want to learn food preservation so that they can take care of their family. So we actually are getting those very specific questions. People just want to be able to take care of themselves.
So which preserve won best in show? Linda Chappell picks up a jar of orange marmalade.
Perfect. It's perfectly shaped, and it just looks like something you definitely want to eat.
Imagine spooning that onto your English muffin some blustery morning this coming winter. Heaven. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
If you'd like to learn more about the University of Arkansas Division of Agriculture Research and Extension Service, you can go to uaex.edu, then just choose your county. And if you'd like to hear a collection of historic interviews with Extension homemakers from around the state, you can search the feature section on the Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History website at pryorcenter.uark.edu.
Some of us do it religiously each and every morning. Others, not quite so often, or perhaps never. Making the bed. This Wednesday is National Make Your Bed Day. Whether to keep the cat hair from marring my crisp red sheets, or just to make the room look better, there are benefits to this daily routine. Other than military barracks and hospitals, hotels have a lot of beds. I visited the Inn at Carnal Hall in Fayetteville and watched as head of housekeeping Esther Salazar dressed a king-size mattress.
Extended force sheet, the free sheet. Normally only work when one housekeeping for make the bed, so.
She extends the fitted sheet and begins tucking the elastic around the top corners of the sleeper, finishing with the bottom and smoothing it out with a hand. Then grabbing the flat sheet and ensuring that the tag is on the bottom. And, with help from front desk manager Steve Norton, ensures that it is even and symmetrical, which is key to getting those hospital corners.
Well, the sheet goes on the bed as symmetrical, like they say, as possible. And then when we pull the sheet back, we use the extra and tuck it underneath the mattress, as I said. But as far as perfect corner, it should be symmetrical on the bed prior to you tucking it into the mattress. So,
after the corners are nice and tight and the top sheet has been folded down, a feather comforter is placed on top. And of course, it must be symmetrical.
And the next, put the blanket. When put the blanket, put symmetric, and put the two queen pillow and three queen pillow and symmetric too. So.
And the comforter that she's talking about, it has a liner that we change out each and every day that gets a clean liner, and they get washed as well, the actual padding part that's underneath. But for the most part, as you can see, everything is white, so we can tell when there's stains and anything on it if we need to switch that out as well. So,
with a team of six housekeepers, two in laundry and four cleaning rooms, each changes the sheets on about 12 beds every day. 13 standard kings, 23 executive kings, six double rooms with two queen beds each, two Euro rooms, and two handicap rooms make up the 52 beds at the Inn at Carnal Hall.
We have 49 rooms in our hotel, and we usually run right now between 50 to 65%. And in a busy season, while school is in session, we run a little bit higher, about 68 to 75%. When football season is going strong like it is right now, we're at 100%. So all 49 rooms are used. And, you know, that's when each housekeeper will do more than 10 to 12 rooms a day. But they definitely earn their money in the football season on those Friday, Saturday, and Sundays. So,
even if it isn't in your daily routine, make your bed this September 11th in honor of National Make Your Bed Day. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large.
This week in This American Life, Michael Lewis tells the incredible story of how a teenage boy made it into college, into Harvard no less, thanks to a stolen library book in another language, and real essays and emails sent to college admissions officers, including one from a parent that begins, "My second grader has decided on a career in electrical engineering. He is leaning towards MIT. As schools start, how I got into college, this week.
This American Life, just ahead this morning on KUAF, beginning at 10.
In Northwest Arkansas, local residents can often sample tasty treats for a good cause. One example is Savor the Flavor, a fundraising event for Washington Regional's volunteer-based organization, Faith in Action. The event, which took place Tuesday night, allowed participants to sample a variety of foods from Dixon Street restaurants. Your next chance to taste delicious delicacies for a good cause will be September 12th at Chefs in the Garden. The annual Botanical Garden of the Ozarks fundraiser will feature food prepared by local chefs.
If you feel the need for exercise after indulging in the offerings, you're in luck. and there are plenty of active fundraisers scheduled throughout September as well. These events include walks for ALS and Alzheimer's disease, as well as the annual Run for Every Chris, the Charity Challenge of Champions. An event now in its 22nd year supports the Arkansas Crisis Center and Crisis Center Foundation. The multi-day event includes tennis and golf, as well as social events. Next weekend, a LifeSource International event will give participants the chance to show their support by hiking or riding a bike. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
LifeSource International is a Fayetteville-based nonprofit organization whose mission is to give a hand up, not just a hand out. According to its website, LifeSource uses a holistic approach to help people in need through a variety of programs and services, such as a clothing pantry, food storehouse, counseling services, and medical care assistance. September 14th, the organization will host its annual Hike or Bike Against Hunger fundraising event. Participants will meet at Panera Bread in Fayetteville and use the Mud Creek and Skull Creek trails. With the expansion of the trail system throughout Northwest Arkansas, it's becoming more and more common to see people riding their bikes. If I want to become one of those bicycling residents, how do I know what kind of bike I need? A good place to start looking for assistance is a local bike shop.
Yes. Hi, what's your name?
Carolyn.
Carolyn, hi, I'm Ben. Give me just a minute, I'll be right with you. If y'all are looking at the right stuff,
she's definitely a medium, Bruce.
Yeah. Okay.
Ben Upchurch is the owner of the bike route in Fayetteville. The shop is located near Panera Bread and is one of the sponsors of LifeSource's upcoming fundraiser. Ben's shop has been open for more than 3 years, and he says the first thing he asks customers is what they're going to do on their bike. Based on that, Ben will direct them to one of three types of bicycles.
The road bike is your old school 10-speed you may have heard of as a kid. It's the curved, dropped three-position handlebars with, you know, these days 20 to 22 gears. That's for longer distance, higher mileage, lightweight performance. A mountain bike is meant to tackle trails on the mountain, dirt, rocks, roots. A hybrid is our bread and butter as far as quantity of bikes we sell. And a hybrid has the gearing of a mountain bike, so it's really easy to get up hills, but you still have the ability to go fast on a flat road. But it has the lightweight attributes like a road bike. Thinner tires, it doesn't have suspension on it normally, so it's a lighter bike. So it's a hybrid of the mountain and the road bike. So most of our bikes throughout the year, we're going to sell a hybrid bike. That's kind of our bread and butter, like any bike store's bread and butter. But, you know, most people don't want to do the Tour de France, and most people don't want to go downhill on a mountain bike. So the hybrid is kind of definitely our number one seller.
Once you've found the proper type of bike to suit your needs, you need to find a bike that's the right fit. Ben explains that bicycles come in different sizes to accommodate people of different heights.
The worst thing a person can do is spend a lot of money on a bike that doesn't fit them. We take a lot of time and make sure that you, the customer, you could buy this green bronze in here, but it comes in five different sizes, and we want to make sure you're on the right size. Once we determine your size, no matter what kind of bike it is, a hybrid or road or mountain, we're going to get you on our fitting area, get you on the bike on a stationary trainer, and measure your knee angle when it's at the bottom of the pedal stroke. That determines your saddle height very accurately. So we've got a way to measure that. And then we're going to determine the stretch, the distance from the handlebars to the saddle, to make sure you're not stretched out too far or you don't have the handlebars too close to you. So as important as it is to be on the right size bike, it's even more important to be fitted correctly on the right size bike. So, for instance, a road bike for us, once the purchase is done, we want you to spend about 30 minutes with us after the purchase to get the bike on the trainer and to get you dialed in completely. That way, when you leave the door, you've got everything you need to do. You're fitted on the bike, you're outfitted correctly, and everything's set up for you from day one.
Once you have a bike and begin riding it, it's important to conduct routine maintenance to keep the bicycle in good shape.
We talk to everybody like they're buying a car. It's a machine with moving parts, so maintain it. If you don't maintain it, it's going to fall apart on you. So we offer, not to go into the sales spiel, but we offer free adjustments to shifting and brakes, the most commonly worn out or commonly misaligned parts on the bike. We also promote getting a full tune-up done at least once a year, depending on how much you ride. The average person once a year. Me? I do a complete tune-up on my bike probably once every 6 months. But you want to go over all the moving parts, make sure they're working as best they can depending on the condition. You may have to replace things here and there. But But a tune-up gets everything clean and working properly and would reveal things that need to be replaced. But for you, you buy a new bike, you want to lube the chain every 2 weeks probably, depending on, you know, if you're riding in nice weather every 2 weeks. Keep the tires inflated because that's going to make it a better ride for you. And if it gets dirty, like your car, clean it off. And if you've got to use a bucket of water and Dawn soap, that's perfect. Rinse it off after you're done. We're not a big proponent of taking it to the car wash because you could blow out the grease and the bearings and stuff like that. But we like to be proactive on maintenance. And if you, any of our customers who have questions, we bring it in, let's look at it, let's see what you need to get done.
Ben's knowledge of bicycles comes from decades as a cyclist. Ben says he started racing bikes 23 years ago and even spent some time as a cycling instructor. He says he loves the sport, which he finds addicting, and he continues to race today. Ben belongs to the Dixon Street Cycling Club, which is sponsored by Snapple.
Racing bikes are kind of like bowling. There's a huge pro circuit not a lot of people know about. But actually, Northwest Arkansas and Oklahoma and Southern Missouri and Kansas have a huge racing scene, like Texas. You don't get to see it every day in the newspaper or anything like that, but within a four-hour drive of Fayetteville, you can easily, I used to do 30 races a year within a four-hour drive of Fayetteville. So Little Rock, Tulsa, Kansas City, all those areas. And if you can do even more, you're driving to Dallas, which is, you know, a little bit longer. But huge opportunity to race. And that's been my driving factor, but most people don't race. But I will say this about Northwest Arkansas, if you're not a racer, it has the best system of county roads that are paved with little traffic. I've lived in Fort Smith, Little Rock, Southern Mississippi. This is the best cycling environment ever. We haven't even talked about mountain bikes. I'm mainly talking about road bikes. Great mountain biking also, but I think with all that and this move away from being in the gym to being outside and being active and doing triathlons and running, you know, the cycling element of that has taken off hugely.
The Hike or Bike Against Hunger event to benefit Life Source International is scheduled for 8 to 10:30 a.m. September 14th at Panera Bread in Fayetteville. Breakfast will be provided by Panera, and the bike route is donating a bike to be raffled off at the event. For registration or more information, you can visit lifesourceinternational.org. If you'd like more information on the bike route, visit facebook.com/thebikeroute. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Singer and songwriter Barrett Baber recently stopped by the Furman Garner Performance Studio. While he was here, he played the song Quarter to Four.
Two. But it's quarter to four, and I'm thinking of you. Oh, these mellow
night sky turns bright now. My soul is dark. White lines and hype now. Oh, they get me through one more. 'Cause I know what's awaiting. I ain't no fool. It's quarter to four. And I'll be thinking of you. Quarter to four. I'll be thinking of. I be thinking of you.
Barrett Baber will perform at George's Saturday evening at 9 for the release of his new album, Battlefield Us.
On a farm near Decatur in western Benton County, a team of farmers walk toward a collection of chicken houses as the sun rises. Chicken houses in rural Benton County, not that unusual. A poultry business operated by the grandson of the founder of Peterson Farms, not unexpected. But this farm doesn't look like most of the commercial poultry interests across the country. Robert Smith, the farm manager for Crystal Lake Farms, turns a gear that opens a series of doors on a chicken house to let young chicks waddle outside on their own. These chicks are allowed to go outside when the weather allows, giving the chicks a chance to roam around the field as part of the philosophy at Crystal Lake Farms, according to Smith.
I've had the guys that work out here laugh at me. I've come up with some crazy ideas, some that have worked, some that haven't, but there'll be people show up at this chicken house and I'm doing nothing but sitting there on a bucket. What's that chicken telling me he wants? You know, you have to spend time and give the bird what he wants, and you have to sit around and figure out what he's trying to tell you.
Robert Smith is a lifelong farmer. He was a fourth generation farmer for Peterson Farms. So when he talks about observing chicks and letting them tell him what they want, you listen. He's seen and worked the modern chicken house, and he thinks there are better ways to raise the birds, and not all of the methods are exactly new.
And what's the term I try to use, going back to the future?
Yeah, something like that.
Trying to stay as humane and animal friendly as at all possible, but use modern genetics to end old-fashioned bird raising situations.
We've raised the other commercial breeds out here in conjunction with ours, and it's very noticeable that those birds don't want to go outside.
Blake Evans is the grandson of the founder of Peterson Farms, Lloyd Peterson, who started his poultry business more than 60 years ago. Blake and his team are raising Crystal Lake Free Rangers, a breed he says thrives on foraging in open pasture. He says this bird is being raised for a consumer not looking for a typical chicken.
One of the things that we think is a huge plus for our breed is it loves to get outside and forage. And, you know, you talk to most people, just the other commercial breeds, they'll stay inside, and ours just love to get out and go.
When the chicks are inside in the houses on the farm, they still have room to move. Again, Robert Smith, the farm manager.
The typical bird has about 0.75 square foot per bird when they get old. These have 1.42 average or something like that, almost twice as much room as a mainstream type broiler.
Robert says there are about 4,700 birds in each half of this house. The chicks will stay in the same house from their first day until they're taken from the farm. So there is a constant rotation on Crystal Lake Farms. Houses with the youngest birds eventually become the houses with the oldest. Robert says letting the chicks have hours outside means the animals can do what they do naturally. Richard Udale, the geneticist on the Crystal Lake Farms team, says that exercise, not just going to the feeder and then sitting down, has benefits on the farm and at the market.
Is that you don't see these birds having any problems with mobility. How old are these rabbits? 6 weeks?
6 months.
So they're really starting to put on the weight now in the meat. But they're able to get around because they've got a good set of legs under them that's developed and mature enough to carry that weight. And I think that's one of the breakthroughs that we've made really in trying to do this.
Blake Evans says the experiments and the setup here have taken time. The work on this farm began in 2009, and they're almost ready to have the Crystal Lake brand available on retail shelves. That will begin in just a few months. Blake says the entire process has been undertaken in accordance with standards established by the Global Animal Partnership.
If you've been in a conventional house, I mean, there's solid walls, there's no sunlight coming in, all the air is coming in through cool cell pads, and you know how much mold and bacteria and virus, and it all goes through there. So, I mean, the birds are definitely regulated with, you know, a constant temperature and airflow, but, you know, fresh air and sunlight, those are a couple of the things that really allow the chicken to be natural and help contribute to the good taste.
Farm manager Robert Smith says the rules set by the Global Animal Partnership cover the birds from before they're hatched until they're taken to market.
Most commercial birds, the guys, when they go out to catch 10 to 12 birds at a time just by one leg, these birds for this Global Animal Partnership, five at a time is the most we can carry. They have to be carried by two legs, so they don't do as much flopping and fighting. It's all an animal welfare issue. I mean, we're trying to cover every animal welfare issue we can cover.
The birds here are slower growing and live a little longer than many other commercially raised chickens. They're on the farm about 2 weeks longer, according to Blake. Working with this breed and with these operations takes a small leap of faith, the experience these farmers have each accumulated, some intuition, and paperwork. Inside each chicken house are clipboards with detailed spreadsheets.
So we'll write down any culls or mortality, the days that we're opening the doors because the weather is fine. If there's a hazard like snow or ice or tornado, we mark that down. You know, how many birds we put in every house and how many pounds per square feet that is, and just to track our averages. And so we follow a lot of data, and that just helps us get better.
This setup, fewer birds per square foot and a longer time to market, raises the cost to raise each bird, and that price difference will be reflected somewhat on retail shelves. But the Crystal Lake team believes there are shoppers who want chickens raised this way. The original plan was to be available on shelves by the end of 2013. Blake says they've pushed that timeline back slightly.
Let's see, we started developing the breed almost from scratch, I would say, in 2009 in March. And our intention was to come into retail sales this year. We're really pushing that to the start of 2014. And we knew immediately when we started developing this breed, you don't want to sell it to the public when it's not ready. And so we've just been holding back and using it ourselves and, you know, watching how it performs so we can give people a real accurate description of what this will do.
And for Robert Smith, the farm manager at Crystal Lake Farms, this operation has brought him full circle.
For me, it's been kind of a gradual deal. Even when Mr. Peterson was alive, Richard, 2003 and 4, out here on this particular time farm, we did an all-natural product. We didn't place them near as thick, and we used an all-natural feed. We didn't do the outside conditions or GAP certified, but even then, you know, noticing the different taste and texture of the product, and this is even a lot greater than that was. But it's been, for me, it's been kind of gradual, and plus I was born and raised in the chicken business. My dad built his first chicken house when I was 6 years old, and we didn't used to have foggers and fans and everything to keep birds cool. I can remember when the birds would get 4 or 5 weeks old in the summertime, you opened up side doors and indoors and let them head to the shade tree to keep them cool in the summer. And a lot of this is, you know, like I said earlier, going back to the future. So it was gradual for me, but it was pretty easy for me to buy into.
This is Ozarks at Large. It is Sunday, September 8th, 2013. Good morning. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
We are happy to have inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
And I'm going to just wear you out.
Okay.
I'm already worn out.
Yeah, it's been a long
time. Oh, this is, it's good. Either that or you will feel so good about your life by the time we're done talking that you'll go dance around the block.
Okay.
All right.
We're going to talk about the Rogers Little Theater production of The Wizard of Oz.
Christina and I talked a little bit about that at the end of Thursday's show because there will be flying.
There will be lots of flying. The show opens Friday, which is why we're talking about it today. They're going to fly Dorothy, the Witches, the Monkeys, and the Wizard.
Above the stage.
Above the stage. 2 30-foot tracks put in by a professional company. It takes 2 or 3 people per flight, per person.
Because you've got to be...
with pulleys and stuff and
you've basically got to have one who's in charge of up and down and one who's in charge of across.
And then don't you usually have someone who's watching them do it? You've got to have kind of the backup, the safety.
And like... for Dorothy, because Dorothy goes up in a tornado, so she spins, which is nice because the little girl playing Dorothy, who's 14, Elizabeth Harvath, is at least a dancer. So she knows how to take off. So there's a witch melting.
Okay.
A tornado on stage. You have to transform the 3 actors from farmhands into the Lion, the Scarecrow, and the Tin Man. In the time span of a 3-minute song.
Wow.
There are 2 sets, sepia and technicolor.
Really?
Fireballs, explosions, and projected imagery to put the rowboat and the cows inside the tornado and give the wizard his big shimmering head.
This sounds like quite the production.
I'm just exhausted thinking about it. And, of course, Ed McClure is directing it. Oh, I forgot there's also a dog, which is its own challenge.
A real dog.
Okay. Yes. So Ed McClure, of course, loves these big productions. And I said, didn't you ever think about doing something different? He said, yeah, about 7 hours into the installation of the flight tracks.
So do they have to rent these?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And you have to have a company come in and install it. And they had to find a giant scissor lift that could get up there for them to safely install it.
Wow. And then probably have the hands
trained.
Run. Yeah.
But, you know, as he says, people expect flying monkeys to fly.
I guess so.
It is the first flying show at the Victory Theater.
Ever.
Because the last time they did Wizard of Oz, which was... maybe 15 years ago, they were still at Rogers High School, which didn't really have a fly loft. The old Rogers High School that is now Heritage didn't really have a fly loft. And Rogers Little Theater, if you've never been there, and shame on you, is a very strange stage because it's a thrust stage with the proscenium way at the back, which makes any of this interesting. Plus, then you've got to get, like, the monkey who's going to carry Dorothy off. You've got to get Dorothy quietly hooked up on the flying apparatus because she's been on stage a while.
Wow.
It's going to be really interesting.
Well, so this sounds like a lot of work. How long is it running?
It is running... 3 weekends,
okay.
Which is a good thing. It opens
That's
Friday on September 13th.
Oh, Friday the 13th.
Yeah. Runs through that weekend, through the weekend that is the 19th through the 22nd, and through the 26th through the 29th. And you pay $48 with dinner, which is a lot of food and a lot of flying.
And this is very much more representative of the film than necessarily the L. Frank Baum novel.
Although, interestingly, the script is by the Royal Shakespeare Company.
Interesting.
So
I promise you'll have a good time. 631-8988 for tickets. And this afternoon, there is a cello concert with Tavi Ungerleider.
Who will not be flying.
Who will not be flying, but he is the National Federation of Music Clubs 2013 Young Artist Award winner.
Excellent.
And the concert is hosted by the Andante Music Club. Happens at 2:30 at Whitehall Auditorium on the Northwest Arkansas Community College campus in Bentonville. It is free. There is a concert at 3 featuring the Bella Vista Men's Chorus, concert called Then Sings My Soul, a fall celebration of faith and spirituality. That happens at the Bella Vista Community Church, and it's $10. The Calle Soul Band wraps up the True Lit Literary Festival at 3 o'clock at the Fayetteville Public Library. Again,
free.
And there's an artist reception from 3 to 5 at the Smith Pendergraph Campus Center at the University of Arkansas at Fort Smith. For Arkansas Champion Trees, the works of Linda Williams Palmer that were here earlier in the year.
Right.
So if you missed it, toddle on down to Fort Smith. The show's open through October 24th.
All right. Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Earlier this morning, Christina, you had the story about making the perfect bed.
I did, yes. It's National Bed Making Day this week.
Which my wife will tell you I have not mastered.
No.
At all. I can make a bed. It's just not very good.
Do you make your bed every morning?
Whoever is second up is usually, but yeah, almost every morning it will be made before the house is empty. Now, in honor of your story, I thought our Sunday montage could be about beds and bed-related items. So here are 10 clips. How can we dance when our earth is turning?
How do we sleep while our beds are burning? This is an alternative to violence. It's to stay in bed and grow your hair.
How pleasant bobbing along. Bobbing along on the bottom of the beautiful briny sea. What a chance to get to bed to peep at the plants and creatures of the deep we glide.
And from the clutches of the noonday devil.
It's my turn for breakfast this morning, Gromit. I like a 3 minute egg.
Steady on. Wow! Gromit!
Hello?
Miss Morrow, Brad Allen.
Look, I am in a hurry, Mr. Allen, so if you don't mind.
Of course. But before you hang up, just admit I was right.
About what?
Your Western gentleman. He turned out to be a prairie wolf, didn't he?
Mr. Allen, this may come as a shock to you, but there are some men who don't end every sentence with a proposition.
Just lie and complain in bed at the hospital. Coming and going, asleep and away in bed at the hospital.
Well, minus specifics, it's hard to help, except to say,
go to the mattresses.
Have to say, go to the mattress. What? What does that mean?
It's from The Godfather. It means you have to go to war. Mm-hmm.
If you'd like to see a list of what you just heard, you can go to our website, ozarksatlarge.com.
In Carl Nielsen's Symphony No. 3, the rhythm is the creative force. Hi, I'm Katie Henriksen, host of the KUAF Sunday Symphony, Sunday night, 7 to 9 p.m., right here on your public radio station, KUAF. Join me for the entirety of Nielsen's Symphony No. 3, Opus 27, from the Swedish Radio Symphony Orchestra, led by Esa-Pekka Salonen. That's coming up 7 to 9 Sunday night right here on KUAF.
Theater Squared Season 8 continues with performances of The Spiritualist, a world premiere by Robert Ford, through September 15th at Walton Art Center's Nadine Baum Studios. Inspired by a true story, this comic drama follows a widow's unlikely rise to fame after channeling the spirits of dead composers and completing their unfinished symphonies. Tickets and more information available at theater2.org or by calling 443-5600.
I need to talk to the person who is in charge of costumes for The Spiritualist. I went Thursday night, and this is a period piece. All of the play takes place in the 1960s, and there are a couple of pairs of shoes.
From the 60s?
There's a fellow who happens to be a record producer, a rock and roll record producer, and in one scene, he has these amazing shoes. And then, I'm not going to give away a surprise, but there is a guest on a talk show who wears this amazing tuxedo. I've got to find out where they came from. So maybe I should do that for the show next week.
Hey, that's a good idea. And I've heard you mention that you like shoes. I've heard you comment on shoes before.
The very nice ones, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And tuxedos. I would wear a tuxedo. Well, no. I was going to say I'd wear one every day if I could, but I like a good, sharp tuxedo.
All right.
But I also like a pair of jeans, obviously. The iFriend program at the University of Arkansas is looking for volunteer hosts for its Friendship, Family, and Campus Cousins programs. Volunteer hosts are matched with international students or scholars for a social friendship. iFriend is not a homestay program. If you're interested in learning about other cultures or sharing American culture and the beauty of Northwest Arkansas with a new friend, you can contact Karen at iFriend, that's the letter I, friend, at uark.edu. For more information, you can go to iss.uark.edu and find out more about that program.
All right. The Samaritan Community Center Snack Packs for Kids program needs volunteer delivery drivers for Washington County Schools. The responsibilities of a driver are to pick up bins of snack packs from Springdale on Tuesday or Thursday, anytime between 8 a.m. and 1 p.m., deliver them to the schools, and return the empty bins to the Samaritan Community Center when you pick up new bins the following week. For questions or additional information, or to volunteer, 479-636-4198.
And don't forget, Rogers Little Theater presents Wizard of Oz September 13th through the 29th. For more information, rogerslittletheater.org or 631-8988. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Elkins.
All right. Highway 16.
Yep. You know their high school mascot?
No.
Elkins.
Elk.
Right.
That easy, huh?
Yeah.
Oh.
Elkins Elk or Elks. Either is correct. For years, I thought that it plural of elk could only be elk, but according to Webster's Dictionary, elks is also
is acceptable.
Correct.
But
yes.
With deer, it's always deer.
Yes.
And moose?
Moose.
Right.
Or mooses.
Mooses.
Moose. Moose.
I don't know.
I don't either. Fish. Fish.
Up.
Right. Okay.
All right. Well, Weekend Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
You'll be back tomorrow?
I'm all by myself tomorrow at noon for a brand new daily edition of Ozarks at Large.
All right.
You and I aren't back together again until Thursday.
Nope.
Okay.
All right. Well, until then, thank you so much for listening and have a good Sunday.